This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Second hour here of the program. Shout out Ian Ritchie, who joined us here, the first entrant in the Circa Grandissimo. Absolutely great conversation as we are now in contest season. And if you're wondering, like, oh, hey, you know, or early on, what's it like? We actually do have quite a few entrants already here for all three contests. We have one in the Grandissimo, as we have already discussed. We have, let me double check, let me look real quick. We have five already in the Circa Million, and 11 in Circa Survivor. So the back of my head is wonderful. I have thick, luscious hair, but you won't have to see it again. But we are already getting some of these entrants back into this thing. Yeah, no, not yet. Not yet, hopefully. Hopefully I don't take after my dad. Hopefully it's more of a mother side thing. But this contest season, man, I'm very excited. And you said earlier, Mark, and Mark Blues is in for Stormy Bonatoni here today. It's football season. We are less than 70 days away from the Hall of Fame game. It's going to be here before you know it. It seems like you kind of blink and you're right back into it. We are less than 100 days away from the first week of college football. And we have, like, I can't wrap my head around it. We're still not even to the All-Star break in Major League Baseball, and we're still already feeling like just heartbeats away from football season.
Yeah, contests are open. Training camp right around the corner. You get out, you know, the schedules came out May 14th. You knew who the opponents are. Now you know how each team's schedule is stacked up over the course of 18 weeks, 17 games. You know, it's, you know, the win totals are, it's just a great time of the year, you know, as we all love this and what we do on a day in, day out basis. And who doesn't love the National Football League? Who doesn't love college football? And now you get to digest it all. The draft is done. Free agency is done. And now you get to reap the benefits of it in terms of the contest, fantasy football, picking each and every week. It's just great. And you can sense it. You know, we're at Memorial Day weekend. We're at the Friday of Memorial Day weekend. You know, blink of an eye, it's going to be July 4th. Once you hit July 4th, you're 2.5 weeks away from training camps opening up. And then when training camps open up, you're weeks away from the college football season getting going. And then the start of the NFL regular season right after Labor Day. So, JBT, this is as good as it gets. I love this time of year because you kind of can, you have all the information necessary to kind of dive into and make some sound, logical picks. Sometimes logic doesn't work when you're looking at making bets, but still, this is an awesome time of year.
So with that, as we are inching ever closer to college football, we finally get the news yesterday that the college football playoff has decided to change its format. Now, last year, the top four conference champions got byes. That is no longer the case. Conference commissioners voted to go with a straight seeding format. Five spots are still reserved for conference champions, but essentially now it goes by your rankings. So we won't have these weird unveilings where you have like a column of the rankings, but then a different spot in the seeding. It will just go by pure rankings. A lot of people up in arms about, namely Boise State, but also Arizona State getting into those top four when they were perceived better teams, not getting a bye. I will ask you this, because I do have a thought on this that I haven't seen talked about too much, and maybe I'm making too much about nothing, but generally, yes, you approve, disapprove, are you happy with the changes that we have now for the college football playoff?
Yeah, I like it, because I think in the end, the goal is to try and have, you know, the best, what in essence is a tournament than anything else, right? When you're looking at the college football playoff system, right? So you're looking to have the best matchups, you're looking to have the most competitive games, and in the end, you're looking to crown the best team. Not to make it more difficult, one over the other, some having an easier path, so I like the adjustment. It's been talked about for a while here. The announcement came down yesterday. To me, it makes perfect sense. You know, I think they're going to expand it a year from now, JVT. I think you're going to go from 12 teams to 16 teams. It just makes perfect sense. You know, I know there's some conjecture about the revenue sharing between the conferences. That's something that's going to stay the same as it was a year ago, even though now they're going on rankings and not the automatic buys when you're looking at conference champions. But still, to me, it makes perfect sense. I think it's going to lead to a better product.
So I think it makes sense. The one caveat I had that I don't know if it's really going to be that big of a deal or not. Having said that, if you go by last year, your seeding would have been your top four: Oregon number one, Georgia number two, Texas number three, Penn State number four. Mark, those were all four of those teams were facing each other in conference championship games, right? It was Oregon versus Penn State. It was Texas versus Georgia. Right. Those conference championship games do now really lose their luster if we're getting matchups between four teams that are essentially locked into getting byes. I don't know where the drama comes from and Penn State needing to win a game against Oregon. Like last year, that's somewhat dramatic, right? Like if Oregon loses that game, you don't get a bye. But now if you lose that game, that's fine. You're still going to get a bye. You're going to be four. That to me is like the only complaint. You do lose some of the meaning if you're going to get these matchups in these Power Conference championship games, namely the SEC and the Big Ten, where two top four teams are meeting with each other and the only thing at stake is seeding. And it doesn't really matter even if you lose the game, because if you lose, you're still going to get a bye.
Right, when you're looking at personal pride, right? I get it, but that doesn't that go hand in hand when you have the expanded playoff system? I mean, I understand the point that you're making, John. It's a fair one, right? When you're looking at it and saying, well, but all of that has changed now when you expanded the college football playoffs. When you went from, you know, the 14 playoff system to now 12, and then the 12 to 16, you're minimizing stuff during the course of the regular season. You're minimizing the championship games. You see it in college football, college basketball year in and year out, right? I mean, you know, all over. That has become, in essence, I mean, we love it throughout the course of the regular season, but I'm talking about for Joe and Jane America across this country. They pay attention when college, when the NCAA tournament gets going. I think more and more that's where we're going in college football here. So, yes, does it impact those conference championship games? For sure it does. But in the end, this is the moneymaker when you're looking at college football because of the interest in it. And in the end, you know, having the true champion at the end of it. So I get what you're saying, but I think when you expanded it, I think it went hand in hand with minimizing that to begin with.
All right, well, we'll have plenty of time to debate what the college football playoff looks like. In totality, your first-round matchups, for those who are interested, and many have probably seen it by now, Notre Dame-Clemson would have been your 5-12, Indiana-Boise State 8-9, Ohio State-Arizona State 6-11, and then Tennessee-SMU would have been 7-10, and Oregon, of course, getting the glory of facing Ohio State immediately on, would have had maybe a little bit of a better shot if they had been the one seed with this current format. All right, with that, we do have playoff games a little bit later today, of course, in the association and in the NHL. We've talked a lot about side and total. I wanted to get your thoughts on some player prop angles, specifically in the Eastern Conference Finals tonight, and see what you think, because I thought there were three things from a player prop standpoint that stuck out to me that I'll be interested to see in either how they go or what I have bet here. And I wanted to start with a former New York Knick, Obi Toppin. I don't know if you saw the video after the game that they won in the Garden, but there was a Knicks fan who told him he was garbage. Yeah. Obi Toppin then looked at him and told him where he was staying and said, "Me, like, essentially, like, roll through, buddy. Like,
I'll see you at the Ritz." He said, "I'll see you at the Ritz." Yeah,
it's a great video.
It's great.
But what I wanted to bring up here for Obi Toppin was he had 10 rebounds in that game. He played 20 minutes.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think sticks out about the Indiana Pacers from a, you know, statistical profile, I noted this in the preview, we saw it come to fruition the other night. They're not a great rebounding team, Mark. And I think that this is a series in which Obi Toppin is going to have a larger workload because they desperately need somebody on the glass to help them. They need reinforcements in terms of their rebounding. This was just the second game in the postseason that he had played over 20 minutes. I think that this is a series in which the workload for Toppin increases. His rebound prop today was only 3.5, shaded to the over about a minus 135. I think they're going to use him, and I think they desperately need him. And if his workload is going to go up like I expect, then I think that you're going to have a pretty clear path to get over that 3.5 mark and just ask a really springy dude who's pretty good at grabbing glass to get you four or more rebounds tonight.
Yeah, I think it's a great assessment, to be perfectly honest with you. And I think you heard Haliburton after the game talking about the fact that we have to attack the glass a lot better after game number one. And it was something that, you know, the Pacers mentioned it at halftime. You know, what's the concern here? Mitchell Robinson, offensive rebound. Yep. And that is, and he played 21 minutes, right? But you saw the Knicks with a decided advantage. And I think that's why you saw Miles Turner, who got off to an unbelievable start for Indiana, shooting the basketball in game one, you know, found himself at times glued to the bench for Rick Carlisle, is because he wasn't active enough going out there and attacking the glass. And it wasn't just Robinson. It was Bridges. It was obviously Josh Hart, who's a tremendous rebounder for his size. But back to Toppin, I agree with you. And I think that's the brilliance of Rick Carlisle, who I think did a great job in game number one. The options that he had, bringing in Shepherd late in the game, but using Toppin because he said, I need a guy that's going to be athletic. I need a guy that's going to go out there and be active. I need a guy that's going to go out there and challenge on the glass, because we cannot continue to get abused on the glass, because if we do, we're going to end up losing. Not that he's going to go out there and all of a sudden become Dennis Rodman rebounding the basketball, but I think that's a fair assessment coming out of game number one. If Toppin continues to mind his P's and Q's and continues to be the active player that he has been, I think you're going to continue to see an uptick in playing time here moving forward.
Yeah, the other aspect of the rebounding thing, because there's a lot in the three-point market we can get to, but you hit on one of the important keys. So going into the series, one of the long shot things that I've got is Josh Hart to lead the series in rebounds, and he's got 13, so he is the leader going into game two. But I do wonder what that's going to look like, because part of the logic was Hart's a good rebounder. The other part was Indiana's not a good rebounding team. The other, which we didn't really see in the first game, but I'm curious over the long haul, as you well know, Cat does tend to get himself into foul trouble at times. He did have 12 rebounds. He was right behind Hart. So I'm really curious to see if this dynamic holds, because Josh Hart actually killed Indiana on the glass. In three games, he had 30 rebounds against him in the regular season. Like, it's not this outlier that he could actually maintain his status at the top of the board when you're talking about series leader in rebounds.
Yeah, I think that's going to continue. I don't know if he's going to end up leading the series in rebounds, but I think Josh Hart has shown you he's been a glue guy for the Knicks, right? He can't shoot really all that well from the outside, but what he can do is he attacks the glass and gives the Knicks second chance opportunities and does it defensively as well. And the issue that they have with Towns and Brunson for the Knicks here moving forward, when you're looking at their individual props, is their inability to defend and move their feet and put themselves into prone positions to get themselves into foul trouble. We saw with Towns in the Celtics series. You saw it at times with Jalen Brunson in the Celtics series, and certainly you saw it with Jalen Brunson game one against Indiana. And that's going to be something the Pacers are going to go out there and continue to do when they're setting screens, is they want to attack those two players.
We got a team in Major League Baseball that's lost six straight, and it gets a Cy Young winner to face today. Can they snap the skid against them? I'll tell you who that is and how they can do it when we come back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Coming up in 15 minutes, we will find out where Stormy Bonatoni is. But coming up in a month, we know where she's going to be, because I'm going to be with her. We're hitting the road. College World Series in Omaha. We're tripping. We're going to live June 12th through the 14th to broadcast straight from Rocco's, the iconic home of the Jello Shot Challenge. Catch ourselves, Money Moves, and Follow the Money live from Omaha. We're going to bring you the sights, sounds, and best bets from the tournament. And if you're in the neighborhood, stop by and say hello. Very much looking forward to that trip. Very humbled, honored to be able to do it. Have not gone out to Omaha, never been to Nebraska. College World Series, as I hear from a sports standpoint, is a very good event to attend. So I'm really looking forward to it. And as such, been kind of tracking here and there these conference tournaments, which have been going on early mornings here at the book and watching them all throughout the day. Unfortunately, I was talking to this with Grissom the other day. I mentioned this yesterday. The great run from Cal gets snuffed out, but very much looking forward to the College World Series in Omaha next month. So with that, to the big boys in the pros, Major League Baseball, let's start where I left off. I mentioned a team. How about this? It looked like the NL West was at the top of the world, and then all of a sudden, last weekend, Mark, the Padres get swept by the Mariners, the Dodgers get swept by the Angels. By the way, Angels continue to win. But these Padres, they've now lost six straight, and they have gotten their rear ends kicked in these games. They got a negative 30 run differential over these last six games. Today, they send out Nick Pivetta to please, please help us end this streak. Problem is get Chris Sale, who has very much reverted back to Cy Young form. In his last six starts, 35 and two-thirds innings of work, 2.02 ERA, a 2.57 FIP. He has struck out nearly a third of the hitters he has faced, and now he gets this Padres lineup, which has been all over the place over the last week. What do we do here? He's a $1.80 favorite. I see the Padres plus 150, and with Pivetta, I understand how poorly they're playing, Mark, but that seems very tempting. This is nearly 40-cent line move from the overnight number.
Yeah, I mean, it is tempting to take on to take the Padres, but they've lost six straight. You look at the Braves are coming off a tough loss, which we talked about yesterday against the Nats. They've lost two in a row. You know, they're back under the 500 mark. I would lean. I don't think San Diego's, obviously, you're never as good when you're riding a winning streak, never as bad, John, when you're riding a losing streak. So San Diego's got to get – the problem you have is when you're looking at the pitching matchup, I think there's a decided advantage, and you gave the stats with Sale right now and how good he's looked in his last four or five starts. That's why I would lean Atlanta, even though I don't think San Diego's as bad as what they look like right now. And now just six games over 500 at 27-21.
Yeah, no real move on the total, but that is the side. Minus 142 on the overnight, now minus 180. So Sale deserves some respect, but it seems like we're getting to a buy-low point with the San Diego Padres by my measure. All right, so the six-game losing streak there for the San Diego Padres. We should also note another losing streak, the Pittsburgh Pirates. Not surprising that they are on a losing streak. It's the fact that they have lost the last four starts for one Paul Skenes, who gets the start here today for the Pittsburgh Pirates. What do we do with Pittsburgh here in this spot? They're taking on the Milwaukee Brewers. Skenes' numbers, I mean, we talked about this, Will Hill. They are down if you're looking at the strikeout stuff, especially the strikeout rate, down 7.5 points from where it was last year, but not really an issue because still a sub-2.5 ERA. Can the Pirates actually get this done for him today, finally give him something to work with against the Brewers and Freddie Peralta?
Yeah, I think they can. I mean, we love the talented pitcher in Skenes, and there's no doubt he's got a lot of talent, even though he's not been as statistically dominant as he was a year ago. The problem he has is, I mean, they're 17 games under 500. I mean, the Pirates are terrible. Now, the positive is Milwaukee's not great. I mean, they're sitting right around the 500 mark. I think they're a game under as we talk on this Friday, John. So, you know, you look at, is this one where you say to yourself, all right, well, I'm getting Skenes. I think, let me check the latest odds. I think the Pirates right now, they're minus 124. Yeah. If you like Milwaukee, they're plus 108. I can understand someone being bullish and saying, I'm going to take the Pirates tonight. I think it's a favorable pitching matchup. Milwaukee's no great shakes. I know the Pirates are bad, but I'm going to favor Skenes to get back into form. I could understand that, but it's not something I would guarantee because Pittsburgh, there's just not much support around him, and he has not been as great as he was a year ago.
Yeah, it's from a pricing standpoint, it is pretty interesting. It seems light on Skenes, given some of the prices we have seen for him in some of his starts. And that's even as an underdog. A team that as bad as this is getting some pretty short prices when he's been out there. But I can't bring myself to do this. By the way, total open 7. We're down to 6.5. So it gives you an idea of both of these pitchers. Also gives you an idea of both of these lineups and the way that this has gone, really, to this point. I mean, yeah, like this is it has not been great. Any matchups today? Anything you're really looking forward to watching here today, Mark, in baseball?
Yeah, I'm going to give you one. I think it's the sexiest matchup of the weekend, you know, over a holiday weekend, and Mets Dodgers out at Citi Field in Queens. And you know, I think when you look at it and you look at the pitching matchup tonight, you know, and you're looking at Griffin Canning taking on Clayton Kershaw, and you're going to say, well, I mean, you're going to favor the Los Angeles Dodgers to a certain extent. I mean, the Dodgers bullpen has not been great this year. The Mets bullpen has. Mets offensively have really struggled. When you look at it, you know, they dropped Soto down the order from number two to number three that final game up against the Boston Red Sox. Lindor has not been as clutch. They're waiting for Vientos to find himself once again. Now, if you say to yourself, Clayton Kershaw, future Hall of Famer, Kershaw Canning, but we understand this is not the great version of Clayton Kershaw. He made his return and gave up 5 runs. I think it's a favorable matchup tonight for the New York Mets at home as this series gets going. You're looking at their minus 102. The Dodgers are minus 116 on the money line. I do like the Mets this evening, John. I really do. I think they can hit Kershaw. I think at some point in time, Soto's going to get going offensively. We've had 170, 180 at-bats. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be this weekend. It's a rematch of the National League Championship Series. We know that. The Mets have dropped out of first place in the National League East. They've not been great over the last 20, 25 games. They got off to an unbelievable start at home. They come back home after snapping that losing streak up in Boston. I'm going to take Griffin Canning and the New York Mets tonight, minus 102 against the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Don't hate it at all. As you know, now I am an Angels guy. Great tradition of Angels pitchers leaving and becoming great. And Griffin Canning, of course, is on a long list of guys who have left the organization and become absolutely fantastic. And guys that you could see. Guys you could see it coming, but you're like, they'll probably achieve it elsewhere, and that's been the case. It's been cool to see Canning do it. And to the point of Kershaw, look, it's only one start. His fastball velo on average, though, the four-seamer, only 89.2 miles an hour in that first start that we saw over the weekend. It's not looking great for Kershaw, too. So I'd agree with you. I'm surprised. I think the Mets deserve to get a little bit more respect here at home. And if you look at it for Canning, they have won his last eight starts. Speaking of, I just wanted to point out, I do wonder when this ends. Probably not. I mean, probably soon. The Angels are playing very unsustainable baseball. They come back again yesterday. The bats have been absolutely insane. They're hitting the cover off of the ball. But it's very curious to see that this team has now won, I think, six or seven straight. They get Yusei Kikuchi. But Sandy Alcantara is on the hill here today for the Angels. I think this is just morbid curiosity for me, Mark. Like, can this winning streak continue for Anaheim? It has been absolutely unreal to see how well they've been hitting the ball. And now they're a $1.50 favorite today over Miami, some spots as high as -160, but this to me is just, can they keep doing it? And the pricing, right? Like, they were just playing this three-game set against the A's, where they were pretty decent underdog each way. Offense gets it done, and now look at what the market thinks of the Marlins, as they are +140 near underdogs on the road against the Angels today.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to ride the heater. You know, John, I know you're a big Angels fan. You know, why can't they keep it going? And I have a healthy respect for Alcantara and what the Marlins and what he is as a starting pitcher. But I think things are offensively, for sure, when you look at the Los Angeles Angels right now, things are cooking right now. And I think they deserve to be the healthy favorite this evening that they are against the Miami Marlins. And I think it does continue. You know, Kikuchi, Alcantara, an interesting pitching matchup. You know, Alcantara obviously has a tendency, he can go out there and dominate. I don't think it's necessarily going to be the case. And we talked a little bit about it as they were wrapping up their series against the Athletics, you know, knocking around Luis Severino. I thought the winning streak would continue there. It did. I think it continues tonight against the Miami Marlins.
Yep. I think one more thing we can get to here really quickly, just because, again, this series does carry some weight to it in the National League. But D-backs are going to hit the road to take on the Cardinals for the weekend. This one is very interesting. These two wild card teams that are going to be dueling with one another, one would assume, for one of these wild card spots down the stretch. D-backs with Zach Gallen initially opened up as -118 favorites. We're upwards now of -130. This is a very interesting matchup, Mark, because to put it mildly, Zach Gallen has sucked. When you look at what he has done,
yes,
his last two starts have been abysmal. 10 earned runs over 10 and two-thirds of work. Every other metric for him outside of the strikeout stuff is 31st percentile or lower. I don't think I'm at a point where I want to lay $1.30. I think Michaelis has something coming for him, but I don't know if I'm laying $1.30 with Gallen on the road here.
I am not either. I think it's too much. I really do. I can understand. I can't back Gallen at you know, -$1.30. I just can't. That's a little bit too much. I would take the Cardinals at +110 if I were to take anything at all. It'd probably be more of a stay away from me. But to me, Arizona at, you know, open up at -110. Now they're up to -130. To me, that's thanks but no thanks.
Yeah, I think one way to look at this too, first five total, 4.5 over -120, I think a way to look as well. There's some interesting metrics for Michaelis that paint a different picture, and Gallen, as we mentioned, has really just been all over the place. All right, we come back, we'll reset when it comes to hockey as well. And remember, coming up in about 20 minutes, Derek Stevens is going to join us in studio, get his thoughts on the newly unveiled Circuit Grandissimo, where the entrants are, and more. Don't go anywhere. Money Moves wraps last 30 minutes.
Watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Remember, they are now. Circa is open for business, folks. Contest entries are open. Started at 9 a.m. today, so we're an hour and a half in. Got entries already in all three contests, including the brand new offshoot of Circa Survivor. Although, given what's at stake, I wouldn't call it like an offshoot. Circa Grandissimo, which we'll get some more details on with Derek Stevens, who's going to join us in studio coming up in about 15 minutes. From now, Mark Malus is alongside, filling in for Stormy Bonatoni. We'll also find out where Stormy is coming up shortly here. But we do have many games here today. We also have our best bets to get to, so let's do this. GBank, the official bank of VSiN, of course, gives you our best bets every single day. And we introduce from GBank the $500 trifecta. GBank, first bet, and VSiN. All you got to do, open a GBank Visa Signature credit card in the first 90 days. Deposit and play through $1,000 at first bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First bet will give you a $100 deposit match. And VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through August 31st, a $200 value. That's a $500 trifecta from GBank First bet and VSIN. Head to VSIN.com/GBank. That is VSIN.com/GBank. One-time promotion to limited customers. Opening a new account in response to this offer will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply. All right. I will give you the floor, Mark. I know you got something. I'm curious your thoughts. So I'm going to force you, though, to go to hockey because I think you got something here in the National Hockey League, and I'm very curious about the bounce back for Dallas and what it's going to look like for Edmonton.
Yeah, John, I like the Oilers tonight, minus the 105. And buying into what I saw, what we all saw for the first two periods against the Dallas Stars. And listen, I think this is a long series. I don't think there's any doubt about it. You know, we mentioned how quirky it was scoring three consecutive power play goals in that third period. The fact that Dallas scored five goals in that third period to negate a 3-1 deficit going into that third. You know, I don't think that's repeatable. I do have concerns when you look at Skinner, the netminder for the Edmonton Oilers, and he's not exactly Mr. Consistency. However, I do look at five-on-five play, even though, and you pointed out before, when you look at the analytics, it's not exactly like they were dominant, right? It wasn't Florida, Carolina, but there was a lean toward Edmonton through the first two periods, and I think that's going to continue. And I think if Edmonton's able to clean up, not take as many penalties or give up three consecutive power play goals like they did in game one, I'm going to take the Oilers to bounce back tonight in Dallas and even up that series as it heads back up to Canada for a game three tied up at one apiece. I'm going to take the Oilers minus 105.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I'll probably have a little on the Oilers just to sit out and sweat at a local watering hole later today and check that out. But very much looking forward to the game to see if they actually have it. So nothing in the NHL for me, but I will say going to the NBA, we hit on a couple of aspects of this. So I did bet over on Obi Toppin, minus 135, over 3.5 rebounds tonight. Again, I expect that he should have a bigger role. He did have a bigger role in game one. Expect him to be able to get about 20 minutes. And again, I don't need 10 like he did in game one, Mark. I just need four or more from him. And I think that's something that he could do if he gets that expanded role that I eventually think it is going to be. I think that's an adjustment Carlisle made in game one that he's going to stick with here for a little bit. Again, for those who weren't with us earlier, we're talking about top and rebounds. First 10 playoff games for him, he averaged just about 15.5 minutes per game, 2.4 rebounds. And then in game one, he gets 20. Just twice in the postseason, he's gotten over 20. So I think this is an adjustment Indiana's going to make. I think they're going to stick to it. And I think that's going to help him on the glass. And I know that you've got something here on the side for Knicks and Pacers part two.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Knicks laying the six, you know, and I understand you're going to look at it and say, you know, maybe it's a little bit too much. I think they're going to bounce back tonight. I don't have any concerns. And listen, the concern I have about the Knicks in this series is the pace of play and be able to withstand the sheer numbers of the Indiana Pacers. I don't have any kind of question whatsoever, John, about the mental fortitude of this team. Like, I think the leadership of this team, I think the idea, if you're going to take Indiana tonight plus the six and say, well, I don't think the Knicks can rebound from what transpired in game one, I'd honestly be stunned if they didn't. Now, they might not cover the spread. I think they do. I think what we saw, if they're able to control the pace of play like they did for the better part of 2.5 quarters, really outside of the start and the end of the game in game one, which is important. I get it. I think the Knicks are gonna bounce back tonight. I think Brunson's gonna have himself a game. Towns is gonna have himself a game. I think the advantage on the glass is gonna continue here moving forward. Indiana's not a great rebounding team. If they're able to control the tempo, I think this is a long series moving forward. I think it's a 7-game series. I like the Knicks in 7 before the series got going. I don't think they're losing 2 straight games at home. I'm gonna take the Knicks to bounce back in a big time way in game 2 tonight, laying the 6.
All right. I've got my face kicked in playing against this zigzag all postseason. And I want every part of this. I want 6.5 with Indiana. I think it is absolutely the side. I'm so gun shy, Mark, because like I said, like I've been wrong. Like if you've been playing this zigzag, man, you are making out like a bandit. I can only take so many lashings before I'm like, all right, I'm out. I wanted to point out two things really quickly about this. Actually, really quick before I move on, any other bets that you made here today? Anything else that you like?
Yeah, I like Bridges. Listen, Brunson's sitting at 29.5. I get concerned about the foul trouble with Jalen Brunson. If he stays out of foul trouble, I mean, there's not going to be a ton of defense played. Indiana's not a great defensive team. He should surpass 29.5. Towns is set at 23.5. I'm going to give you Mikal Bridges, who's sitting at 16.5. And you're going to say, well, why? Because I think he's a big-time key. I think you've seen it in these playoffs for the Knicks when they won basketball games. And he got off to a good start, a decent start in game one offensively, and then kind of disappeared. I think you need a sustained Mikal Bridges. I think he's good in the open floor. I think the Knicks have got to do a better job of it. It plays to the strengths of Mikal Bridges offensively. And when you've seen this team, especially in the Boston, the Detroit series, Mikal Bridges has had an impact offensively. 16.5 to me is not too many to get over. I think he finishes anywhere between 18 and 21 points. I'm going to take Mikal Bridges over 16.5 points tonight for the Knicks.
All right. Now, I don't have a bet on this, but this is something I am going to be tracking with, again, morbid curiosity. It is hard not to be attracted to what in the world Aaron Nesmith does from beyond the arc today, because that was insane in game one. For those who do not remember, not only 8 of 9 from deep, but he hits 6 of his three-pointers beyond the 4:55 mark of the fourth quarter to help force that game into overtime. They did not defend him very well. And when you get burned like that, you're going to have a lot of attention on you. But I bring this up, Mark, not only because of what he did in game one, but because of what the market has done. His point total prop, or his three-point total prop, excuse me, is now 2.5. Now, it doesn't sound like much for a guy that's been shooting the way he has, but for a vast majority of the postseason, it has been 1.5. He's got 4 games in which his three-point make prop has been set at 2.5. He's just 2-2, and you're down if you bet those games over. But when his point total prop, or excuse me, three-point total prop is at 1.5, then he is 5-2 to the over. So again, we have an adjustment here. We have the market, of course, reacting to what we just watched, but we also have a team that I think is going to be hyper-vigilant on what Aaron Nesmith is going to do here. I am very curious. Under is minus 180 on 2.5 three-point makes, and I do think the 2.5 is a strong adjustment. I'll be curious to see what he does from deep, but what do you think? Are they going to be very, very vigilant here and putting a lot of attention on Nesmith after he burned him in game one?
Yeah, I think they are. But let's look at how the game flow at game one. Like, think about this. He had 6 in the fourth quarter, right? Before that, he had 2 over the context of the game. All right. So, and Nesmith's a very, very good two-way player for the Indiana Pacers and for Rick Carlisle. But in the context of the game, before he became, as Kevin Harlan called him, a flamethrower in the fourth quarter, like, and that was ridiculous. I mean, it was an unbelievable, stunning performance. I think the market adjustment's too strong, John. I do. I mean, I would not, I'd go under 2.5. I really would. I think the Knicks understand, and he has improved his 3-point shooting each and every season in the NBA. That's credit to him. I think the Knicks are going to understand and went to work video wise of what they did wrong defensively to give him the looks that he got, and are not going to allow him to get those kind of looks later on tonight.
And you did play the Mets today too, right?
Yeah, I like the Mets. Your guy, the former Angel, Griffin Canning, going up against Clayton Kershaw, minus 102 at Citi Field. Mets coming back home, snapped the losing streak, their final game up in Boston against the Red Sox. Offense has been an issue. The pitching for the Mets has been ridiculously good, and the bullpen's been very, very good as well. Should be, you should have 35,000-38,000 set out. I think the pitching matchup, even though Kershaw is a first ballot Hall of Famer, this version of Clayton Kershaw is not that. I think the Mets are going to be able to score some runs tonight, get that offense going. Saw a little bit of a better offense in the final game against Boston. Would be great if Juan Soto had himself a weekend. Give me Griffin Canning and the Mets tonight to get that series start off right. Repeat of the NLCS, minus 102.
All right, like it. Tailed Will Hill, we talked about that. Brewers-Pirates matchup, first 3 under 1.5 at even money. Over 5 in the D-backs, first 5 at minus 5, 105 as well for my baseball card too. So very much looking forward to a good sports day in the weekend as well. I'm looking at tomorrow, yeah. Fever and Liberty tomorrow as well. The real New York-Indiana matchup that I think we're all really looking forward to. Right? Come on now. It's entertaining. It's great. I'm very much looking forward to it.
It is. I love it. Yes, no doubt. The true champion, the Liberty.
I was going to say, yeah, you're champs out there. Very much looking forward to it.
Yes, that's exactly right.
All right, on the other side, I see Derek Stevens out in the window. The guys are going to come in here. We are off and running. Entries are open, so we can go and sign up for all these contests. 3 of them now. We'll talk about them when we return here on Money Moves.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN fans, how would you like to play the Circa Survivor or Circa Million contest for free this season? Well, Winner's Circle Proxy is giving away one free $1,000 entry to each contest plus full proxy service. And get this, you'll be paired with a VSiN host for strategy all season long. Enter now for your chance to win. Just visit winnerscircleproxy.com/VSiN. That is winnerscircleproxy.com/VSiN. Get in on your chance to get one of these free $1,000 entries to the contest here at Circa, Circa Survivor, or Circa Million. But there are now three contests that are active here at Circa. And so to break that all down, we are always lucky to have Derek Stevens, who is nice enough to join us here today, owner, CEO here at Circa. Before we get into the contest stuff, I did run into the garage the other day, and I was with Stormy Bonatoni, who is my regular co-host here. She was on her last day. She was on vacation mode. She was not paying attention because she went out to Italy. You two bonded, so we're doing this. Where in the world is Stormy Bonatoni? She sent us this picture. How about this? Out in front of the Coliseum, Derek. This was sent at, like, beautiful. What, 4 o'clock in the morning our time or something? She's living it up out there.
Whoa, that's today. That's this morning.
Yeah, that's this
all
morning.
All right, very good. Where in the world is Stormy? I love it.
Yep, so she's been having a good time out there. She'll be back just in time for contest. We are going to do, to bring this to the contest, we're going to do a show Survivor and a show Millions. So Stormy and I will be teammates together. We will not be entering the Circa Grandissimo. I'm trying to convince her to split it.
It's early now. Come on, we've been open for 2 hours. You guys might come up with a game plan. I think there's a lot of people around the country coming up with a strategy here, not just to win it, but, everybody wants to get in Grandissimo now, at least from what my phone says.
Look, I want to get in it, that's for sure. So let's start at base one here first. For maybe people who had missed it, don't know how you did, Circa Grandissimo, what is it? What was the motivation behind it?
Well, I think, we started off with Circa Millions, mm-hmm. the typical pick five handicapping contest, and we guaranteed the $6 million, as we did the last couple of years. We're going to get there one of these years, and this might be the year where it goes over. I hope it does. And again, if it does, all the money's going back into the pot and it gets split up. It's going to make the quarterly prizes bigger. Yeah. And then we go to Circa Survivor, which started a year later, guaranteed a million and a half to start, and then it kind of just took off. I mean, it took off beyond anyone's expectations. So last year, guaranteeing $10 million, but we ended up with $14.2 million split with 8 winners. Pretty amazing. We've had this idea of having a third football contest for a couple years now, but we were always a little concerned about if we brought a third contest in, would it cannibalize, our other contest? Would it cannibalize Circa Survivor? I really wanted to grow Circa Survivor as much as possible. And I think this year, after what we've seen the last 2 years, the growth of Circa Survivor, I think this is a contest that doesn't cannibalize Circa Survivor. I think Circa Grandissimo really enhances it. It's going to be a good little brother, yep. or big brother, however you want to look at it. Because I think what gets created is something very, very unique. It's still on all the rule sets of Circa Survivor, but with Circa Grandissimo, it's a little bit of a different strategy, a little bit of a different thought process. You're limited to 2 entries. The guaranteed payout's $1.5 million, and with $100,000 entry fee, mm-hmm. it just amps things up. I think JVT, we've seen how exciting like week 16, 17A, 17B, and 18 can be on Circa Survivor. Effectively, what we're trying to do is take that adrenaline and that emotion, and we're stuffing it right into September. We're going to see what happens.
All right, so Mark is here. Real quick, Mark, before you ask a question, I do want to follow up. For our audience, for some clarity, Circa Survivor rules are the same for Grandissimo, so you can buy back in after Thursday, Friday, correct?
Yeah, I mean, if someone decides to go after the Thursday game or go after the Brazil game on Friday, yeah, you can go in with a maximum of 2 entries into Sunday.
Okay.
I don't think that anybody's
Derek,
gonna do that. But you don't know.
Derek, when you mentioned that it enhances it, right? Just curious, is that because tactically you have a different approach with the new contest as compared to the old contest?
Well, I think it enhances Circa Survivor in a couple ways. Number one, it's going to get talked about a lot, which is, I think, going to make Circa Survivor grow a little quicker. We have an interest in growing Circa Survivor as much as possible. Mm-hmm. The largest legal football contest in the world. I would love to have Circa Survivor blow past the $15 million we're guaranteeing. So I think from that perspective, Circa Grandissimo is going to help on a from a media or just a discussion perspective.
Yeah.
And then I think the strategy becomes really, really unique. I can't wait to have someone that's all in on Circus Survivor, full 10 entries. And you know, let's just say you have some cardinal rules. You're going to save anybody playing on Thanksgiving or anybody playing on Christmas. So let's just say this year, doubly important are the Cowboys, mm-hmm. the Lions, and the Chiefs, because you might need them on one or the other holiday. So you throw those teams aside. So early on, you know, you don't even consider these holiday teams because you need to save them. Well, in Circa Grandissimo, I don't know. If I'm struggling, but I made it to week four, if I make it to week four, I may want to shoot the Detroit Lions at home against the Cleveland Browns. I may want to shoot a couple of other teams. So you're going to end up with a different set of teams left over in your pocket. So I do think the strategy is quite a bit different. And for the individual that's in both contests, yeah, you're probably going to be taking different teams.
Okay, so we had Ian Ritchie. I made the joke, right? He is now a trivia. He's answered a trivia question. Who was the first entrant in the Circuit Grandissimo? It is Ian Ritchie. We were talking about a couple of things. I asked him what he thought you would get for Circa Grandissimo. Now, you have set the guarantee at 1.5, so 15, right? And then everything else past that goes back in. His number, would you care to guess what his number was?
I am very, very focused on getting to 16.
Okay.
I think we are 1/16th of the way sure. there. When I talked to you the other day, I thought I was going to come in. You know, we had just opened. I didn't think we would have anybody in it so far.
Right.
But we got lucky. Ian's a great guy. Fulltimefantasy.com. He does an unbelievable job with his business. He's probably going to do over 100 drafts here yeah. at Stadium Swim and in our suites and things like that. I'm happy for that. So we got one in the books. So I'm going to focus in on and say, I hope we get to 16.
Well, he thinks that you're going to clear that easily. He said 40.
Ooh.
So wow. that's very interesting. That was his number for it. So again, 15 gets you there. You want 16. Yeah. And actually, I thought Mike had a really interesting quote and I think it speaks to your guys's, I think aggressiveness is probably the term for it when it comes to setting these guarantees and what you want in terms of growth. When you guys were on Follow the Money, Mike said, quote, if we get to $15 million when it comes to Survivor, that's disappointing. Like, you want to continue to trajectory and growth here.
Yeah, I mean, I know Mike said that. Mike said that when we were out with Mitch and Paul yesterday. Truly, I want to. Last year was $14.2 million
yep.
and an all-time record. If we can get to $15,001,000, I'm going to say, got the sweat over.
Sure.
I figure it's going to happen about 11 a.m. on that Saturday, like it always does. And if we can get to one over in Circa Grandissimo, I'd be happy with that, and I'd love to see Circa Million. Eclipse $6 million so that we can actually have some bonus prizes going to quarters. So it's still pretty early for me. I just want to make sure we cover our guarantees.
Sure.
That's my big bet. That's my sweat right now.
Derek, I want to ask you, who collaborated to put together the experience package as well as when you're entering the tournament?
We talked, so it would be Mike Palm, Jeff Benson, myself, and our marketing team. We kind of thought through it. We got to know a lot of people through that Crown basketball tournament.
Mm-hmm.
One of their big sponsors was JSX. So it was pretty cool. Like, oh, okay, this is going to be a high-end deal. How about we have JSX pay for a flight for an entrance plus one if you happen to live in a JSX city on the West Coast. So I think they have like 13 cities on the West Coast. So a round-trip flight on JSX to and from. Mike made a couple jokes. It's a lot easier to carry a couple $100,000 in your backpack going on JSX sure. than going through Delta, which is true. You know, the three-night in a founder suite, we have six founder suites. That's our signature suite here at Circa. It gives people an opportunity to check it out. We really don't sell them. It's mostly for players, so it gives people the opportunity to head up there. It's kind of like it's a two-bedroom, mm-hmm. but it's got a massive living room, kind of made for a party type of thing. So three nights there, and then, you know, we got a great chef in Barry Daycake and Barry. So the specialized chef's table there, kind of the specialized deal at Andiamo, the greatest Italian steakhouse in Vegas. So it all just kind of came together. So we just wanted to give everybody something unique that maybe you couldn't buy or couldn't put all together. So this way you have one point of contact. The one point of contact is Cam Ross. He'll take care of it all.
All right, last minute with you here. I asked our crew back there. I'm going to ask you. Would you rather have the 10 entries in Circus Survivor or the one in Grandissimo?
Oh, that's easy. That's the tough question?
That's a tough question.
Oh, it's both.
Okay. That's easy.
It's both. Yeah, okay. It's both.
All right, that's an easy answer. I appreciate it. All right, again, so let people know, entries are open. You've already got a few. Everybody can come down. We're open for business. It's contest season.
It's amazing. Six people. We did six people today. So we got one Circa Grandissimo, I think five or six Circa Millions, 11 Circa Survivors. We're off and running.
Yep. Derek, we appreciate it. Thank awesome. You very much. Good luck.
Thanks,
you'll get
JVT.
There. You got
Thanks,
it. Derek. All right. And looking forward to, of course, our trip to Omaha, because that'll be fun, too, as Stormy and I get to go there. Stormy's in Italy, though, of course. Mark, it's been a good week. Thank you very much for your help. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having
and,
me.
And we will talk next week. Remember, VSiN.com. You check out everything up there, the replays, the shows that are coming up next, too. And come out to Circa and sign up. It's football season, folks. Come down and sign up. Circa Million, Circa Survivor, and now the Grandissimo.